Hello, this is Crispy Erling from Fidelo, where we have a passion for HR consulting and improving performance. In this episode of the People and Performance Podcast, Bill Banham and I look at the processes and people needed to ensure employees are happy, connected, and able to be measured against core competencies. Bill and I are joined today by Pauline James, founder and CEO of Anchor HR Services, a firm on a mission to help organizations with implementing the solutions required to drive a great employee experience and gain business results during changing times. Prior to launching Anchor HR, Pauline held a number of senior positions and led employee relations and labor relations in the Canadian marketplace with large national organizations. She has supported small independent units and large complex divisions in identifying barriers to employee engagement and performance. Her track record includes working with operations and HR divisions to build effective and sustainable programs tailored to their needs. Pauline, it's a pleasure to be having this moment with you today. Bill and I are excited to just have this little brief chat and get to know you better and get to know some of the work that you've been working on with a little more depth and detail. Let's start by talking about strategic HR planning. So we understand that you and your team support organizations in assessing their gaps and needs based upon current work and future vision, and then develop a concrete action plan. Can you talk to us about the mechanics of that and what priorities have changed or emerged since we've crept out of the worst of the pandemic? So the question to you really is, how has the challenge of assessing organizational gaps and needs changed since the outbreak of COVID?
We're definitely seeing a desire and the need to move much faster, yet doing so under more ambiguous and uncertain circumstances. And we saw there was no playbook last year. We are seeing more optimism now and more of a shift to focus on forward planning. We're seeing an interest in automating more processes, both to improve employee experience and as we've seen the challenges and benefits of moving many employees and operations online, but also a need and a realization that in some ways we need to do more with less and have a more flexible organization that can scale up and down. And what this has meant is planning for multiple scenarios. I like how a CEO put it during a recent meeting, that we need to plan with a pessimistic lens and execute with an optimistic one, and really mapping out multiple scenarios to ensuring that they're prepared. And then for us, mapping the people's strategy to those as well. And when evaluating trade-offs, you know, we want to encourage the business and ourselves to consider when we're looking at what do we need to invest in, what do we need to divest in, that we ensure we're evaluating which ones could undermine our investment in our future state. Innosight's done some great work, and they talk about future back thinking, that too often we fall into what they call a present forward fallacy, that most businesses tend to plan for the future by assuming that the current norms and processes and tech will continue on indefinitely, where successful companies work backwards and they envision what they want to achieve and they develop concrete plans to go there. And at the same time, we know that things can really go awry. So we want to keep our eye on, you know, really optimistic futures, but be very practical about what contingency planning we may need to prepare for. And I'm seeing a lift in sophistication around the planning. And I think it's challenging all of us in really good ways. Although I will note, I saw an Economist article this week that said that Lego's claiming that their lift in sales was due to a great strategy, as opposed to parents during the pandemic being desperate to have more at-home activities for their kids that don't involve all online activities. They're large enough that they should hear some loud feedback on that reasoning and hopefully adjust their planning accordingly. But just, you know, a reminder that we can all get lulled into a false sense of confidence.
I love that. I love the Lego example. In my house, we've been buying the Legos for my older kids because they're cool. But also my son started showing me like, hey, when they discontinue this, this is worth this much. And it jumps. So we're like using it as an investment strategy in our place too. So anyway, fun stories, but that's great. I love the fact that you're doing a concrete plan moving forward with this. And I love your statement from the one CEO, which was, you know, plan pessimistic way and execute in an optimistic way. I think that's brilliant.
Now, one other thing that you help with is you develop and implement tailored onboarding programs to ensure new hires are welcomed, equipped, and integrated into the culture and the purpose of an organization. In a time, Pauline, when employers are being, well, they have to be quite creative. They have to bend over backwards to attract top talent, right? Can they do so in ways that don't potentially compromise culture fit?
I guess such a great question and comment. The Great Resignation is real. Vizier's just about to publish a report with some staggering numbers around turnover that also highlights that the impact's being felt across all levels of the organization, with higher tenured employees leaving in larger numbers than we're accustomed to, and also a higher percentage of women, concerningly. So really with that question, you're tapping into two challenges. There's the onboarding, and often most audits, assessments, you do find that they're can be and should be improvements with general onboarding processes. And now we're trying to do that lift, considering we have more employees working remotely in a hybrid environment. And now with greater frequency and at higher levels of the organization, we have individuals leaving that have roles and leadership positions where they can absolutely affect the culture of an organization. And we want to make sure that we're assessing appropriately, and we're setting them up so that we're not compromising our own culture. So the question is, how do we ensure we're adapting to be as attractive as possible to retain our talent and attract great candidates? And really coming back to what's essential for our culture and codifying that. And I think it does take an important effort to be more reflective in that. How many organizations have just learned that FaceTime, for example, is not essential to great service or performance, where they would have said that was a key component of their culture previously? So how do we focus more on the output, what's essential to our brand and our offer, as opposed to the process? So we can compromise where we can to be attractive to candidates and retain employees. And then how do we codify that? How do we ensure that we have, from the basement, less exciting to get your basement done, but we need the employee guides and how we equip leaders and strong onboarding materials to support delivery. But what roles need more coaching and support to make sure they're executing with the customer focus, with the brand offer that we're committed to in mind? How do we leverage technology? How do we leverage processes to make sure we're pairing people up appropriately with their colleagues and with their leaders to have a personalized onboarding experience that connects them effectively to the organization, to the mission? And I'll note, with the Great Resignation and with people leaving, we're seeing, and the studies are showing, it's less about compensation. It's much more about individuals reflecting the past year and a half and wanting more meaning with their work and wanting, yes, they want balance, but they want to see that they're contributing to something bigger than themselves. And I think the efforts to improve onboarding and hopefully really engaging broader employees within that codifying those processes and procedures and communications and engaging them effectively to onboard employees can also reconnect them. That in HR, we need to be much more thoughtful around how we connect employees to their colleagues and to the organization. And studies prior to the pandemic talked about that being what can be missing, that employees who work from home often are pleased to do so. They report higher levels of satisfaction. They're good with the amount of contact they have with their leader. They honestly, I think they like that it tends to be around once a week or so, that their leader's not knocking on their door and continually interrupting them while they're trying to get good work done, but they miss out on the connection with their employees, and they don't have generally as strong a connection with the organization. And those can absolutely lead to issues with attraction and retention and things within HR, I think we're well placed to address and support.
So you support organizations to build a culture of engagement, performance enablement, and innovation. This includes practices that facilitate dialogue and information sharing at all levels of the organization. In the old days of annual performance reviews, they're kind of long gone right now. How can employers today measure an employee's output and commitment to their work and the company's mission in ways that don't alienate the staff?
Yeah, I love that you're picking up on that the traditional approach often does alienate staff, and we still absolutely want to be focused on performance and output, and how do we do so in a way that's effective and motivating? And we know that the traditional performance review processes are universally despised. Deloitte put out a study in 2019 that gave it an NPS of negative 60. I was just reading another study that compilation where it talked about, you know, at best, the objective component to such measurements is between 20 and 30%. But I will say my experience is that most organizations are still on a journey of figuring out the best approach. And they're having a hard time in many cases moving away from more traditional practices and ratings, and so many decisions they have are tied to the more traditional approach to performance management as well. So work with them to really want to bring it back to those key questions around: how do we build a structure and practices that drive your desired culture and performance? How are we going to enable leaders to effectively discuss and support performance and development? And how do we embed this in the flow of work? And I'll note that I find myself sometimes trying to talk growing, successful entrepreneurial organizations that are scaling quickly out of implementing a traditional system. And often once they get larger, they recruit leaders from larger organizations, and they've come from more traditional corporate environments, and they're asking for them. And, you know, I think, you know, we have seen some of the technology begin to shift to keep up with what companies are looking for. I'd like to see more of that, where we have easier time to support companies introduce more iterative, forward-focused discussions with employees. And I would suggest that it is a good practice to consider eliminating performance ratings for the reasons we discussed, and that we're really focused, and employees are much more motivated by goals and milestones than subjective or rule-focused expectations on policy, task, and time. And people also tend to withdraw with subjective feedback, and they have a harder time putting it into action. So just really enjoy working with organizations to sort out, what do we want to accomplish? How do we increase the transparency around what our KPIs are, what our numbers are at, where's the goal, where are our goals, how are we trending towards those metrics, how do we close those gaps? And you think of an example of, instead of a goal being we want to publish 5 blog posts, that we more give them and share the initial objective around, we want to increase web traffic by 5%. And the difference that makes to have employees contribute and continually work towards improvement as opposed to being focused on task. And I like to say that as humans, like almost all of us, we tend to withdraw when we're invited to what feels like an autopsy. And we tend to get really excited when we're asked to help solve a problem. And when we put that problem in the middle of the table, employees tend to be much more open about the areas that they can improve, need to improve, or in the worst case, if it's not a skill set that they hold or own, I've seen they're also much more open to shifting gears and acknowledging that this may not be the best fit for them. So fundamentally, we want to encourage organizations to take a step back and determine, what is our goal? Is our goal to improve performance? Or is it to rate performance so we can justify other decisions? And if we want that more rigid system, and if it impedes motivation and performance in the process, is that worth the trade-off? And I'll also note that we're dealing with humans, so there's no perfect system. And trying to create one, I would suggest, can actually detract from sometimes our overarching goals and work in areas that will have a greater impact, such as more of a focus on continuous forward-focused problem solving, and the benefits that hopefully we saw through the pandemic. And I'll note just for myself, as earlier we talked about onboarding and the importance of leveraging that to support our culture. And I'll share, this is a big one for me and my team. And if anyone wants to reach out, I'm happy to share the books and the reading list I provide to new team members on this topic.
Excellent material. So one of the things, as we look to, you know, we're at that time where we need to wrap up, we like to ask each of our guests the following question. From a culture and people processes perspective, what does a high performing company mean to you?
I would suggest that just as many of us as individuals seek to achieve with varying levels of success each day, to be in balance, a company that's in tune with their current reality. They recognize stability and growth comes from committed and informed employees with a shared vision of the future and a participative culture that welcomes curiosity and sees it as the driver of innovation and ongoing improvement. And we all know that it takes work to sustain such a culture, and it's well worth the investment.
Wonderful. Pauline, just finally for today then, how can our listeners connect with you? So maybe they're not all lucky enough to be in your vicinity where they can go for a coffee with you from time to time, but at least maybe they can connect on LinkedIn or something. And how can they learn more about all the cool things happening over at Anchor HR?
Yeah, please reach out. I'm always happy to connect and talk. Probably easiest to find me on LinkedIn, Pauline James at Anchor HR. We also have our website, anchor-hr.com. And we have so much to adapt to as a community. And we want to support and learn from each other. And I welcome having conversations with this audience.
Super. Well, Chris, I guess that just leaves you and I to say thank you so much, Pauline, for joining us today.
Pauline, thank you so much for being here. It's been an education and it's always fun. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This podcast is supported by Fidello Inc., a consulting firm specializing in improving human performance. Through their products and services, Fidello helps clients design, develop, and implement strategic integrated human resource processes and systems. Learn more at fidello.com. That's FIDELLO.com.